This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Headscarves and Good Yarns with me, Amal Abdullahi. The show is all about talking about race, diversity and everything in between, all in the hopes of empowering a more empathetic Aotearoa. We talk about all these huge life things through the lens of people's lives and stories. I hope every yarn, you take a wee gem from it and expands your heart and mind just a wee bit more. Kia ora, assalamualaikum. Welcome to another episode of Headscarves and Good Yarns. So nice to have you with me again. Always, always, always a pleasure, and always, always so grateful that you awesome folks tune in. There's a lot racing in my mind for this episode, and lots that I really want to get stuck into. But I think the thing that comes to mind first is what's been happening in the world recently. I don't know about y'all, but it seems like, you know, in our own backyard, in our own personal worlds, and just, you know, what's even happening on a global scale, it's looking pretty dire. There's just been lots of heartbreaking news, and maybe I'm just being more sensitive to it at the moment because it seems like it's kind of coming from all different directions, but I feel like a lot of the conversations that I've been having recently have kind of been in the similar energy of, I don't know, dude, life has just been really strange at the moment. And I think when I think about how we respond to events and how we respond to what's going on in the world, it makes a really big difference. It makes a really big difference on how we see the world, on our priorities, and, you know, what we choose to commit to. And but I think there's also ways that we can consume what's happening around us in really unhealthy or unproductive ways. And I just kind of wanted to take some time out to kind of share what I prioritize and what I think about when I am digesting, you know, really, really not so great things. And I hope that helps because, yeah, there's lots of strange stuff happening in the world right now, and really like horrible, tragic things. And I feel like we're just not really, not paying attention to it enough, or B, it's the kind of the question of, well, this sucks, obviously, but how do I handle it? How do I deal with it when it happens? And when I'm reading, and I think the first thing that comes to mind for me is, making sure that I don't engage with, or actually not even engage with trauma porn. I really make sure not to normalize things, and not to normalize and become desensitive to things. And that's huge. And I feel like we're not really aware of how much we will normalize until we really challenge ourselves. But, you know, as soon as you get to the point where you normalize something or desensitize or become, yeah, desensitive to a particular kind of news event or coming from a particular region of the world, you know, as soon as you become desensitized to it, or you normalize that kind of tragedy, you know, people just don't care. Like, for example, I was reading the other day, you know, there is a huge amount of civil unrest happening in Sudan at the moment, and you know, so people are fleeing the country if they can and seeking refuge in other places of the world. And when everything initially became very tense and scary with Ukraine, when Russia was attacking Ukraine, there was visas made. There were a lot more easier like immigration pathways opened up for those fleeing Ukraine. But yeah, I was reading the other day that for those trying to leave Sudan, they need to have, you know, XYZ, and they need to still meet the normal visa requirements. And, you know, I think what's happened here collectively as a world, we've just become, I think, normalized tragedy from Arab countries, African countries, that conflict has come up quite a lot, and I think we've become quite desensitized to it, and we don't pay attention as we should. And I think even for myself, it wasn't until I became really intentional and just asking myself the basic questions of whenever I was reading something tragic, like, who, thinking about it from what is this challenging for me, what biases is it challenging for me, whose voice should be prioritized here. And you know, once you start really, like, intentionally thinking about it like that, because, and it sounds really simple and basic when I say this out loud, but the thing is, we don't often think about things purposefully. I think especially our modern lives, they are so busy and they are so full that we're constantly consuming. We are constantly consuming stuff. Like, I remember, maybe even compared to like 10 years ago when phones weren't as clever, and if you wanted to do anything like related to the internet, you actually had to be on your laptop for it, which meant, you know, when we were talking to people online and we said "be right back," BRB, like, we genuinely meant that, because you weren't kind of on your phone all the time, or just even having your notifications on and just constantly having news thrown at you. When you're consuming that much, there's not a lot of opportunity to be purposeful about everything that you're consuming. And often what happens is things that kind of jump out for whatever the reason may be, things that jump out are the ones that actually kind of come through our consciousness, and we actually absorb that information or sit with it. But, you know, a lot of the information that we do consume is by default, and that definitely trickles down to, you know, keeping up with the news and keeping up with what's happening in the world. And not that there's anything wrong with that. I mean, there's only so much that we can pay attention to, especially when we're consuming so much. But, you know, if you can take the time out to be very purposeful about how you respond and which voices you're prioritizing, I think it does help a lot with, you know, how you process and digest that information. And then what happens on the other end, and I think that's been happening to me quite a lot recently, is, you know, when you do get so emotional, and I'm not saying that emotion is invalid, because it is, you know, when you read something and you are really distraught, or you're upset, or it makes you anxious, or it makes you really nervous or worried. All of these things are valid, and even though they are really scary, big emotions, I think I always, first of all, I tell myself, this is the way that I'm responding to this isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world, because it shows that I care. It shows that I care, and this is important to me. This is really, really important to me. And I think, you know, after I kind of remind myself that it's a good thing in a weird way, because it shows that I care, it then makes me think, well, what can I do in my life, even if it's something very small, even if it's something that seems insignificant, what is something that I can do in my life to help kind of respond to those feelings? And you know, I hate the way that we talk about emotions as if they are weak, or they make you weaker, or they're not practical, or they're not helpful in shaping you know, who you want to be or how you want to show up for the things that you really care about. But I feel like emotions are so important. They, you know, all the things that you care about, all the things that makes you happy and glad and sad and mad, you know, they're the things that show you what's really important to you. And, you know, often when we're talking about things like values, which I will get into later on this episode, when we're talking about things like values, it is a really big conversation to have. But I think instinctively, a lot of our emotions kind of tells us about who we are and what's important to us. And so they're really important to pay attention to. And so if you are, you know, responding or seeing news and it makes you really anxious or scared or just makes you feel, you know, any type of way, just thinking about, well, what can I do in my life, no matter how small it seems, that's within my capacity, that aligns with my you know, values and my skill set? What can I do? What's a commitment that I can make to help with those feelings? And often those are the points where the opportunity for allyship, the door is wide open, and it's about, responding to your feelings in a way that the action can then kind of follow through and walk in through that open door. So yes, sorry, a bit of a tangent, but it's just something that has been really top of mind at the moment, because the world seems so strange at the moment. For example, for myself recently, I can't remember where exactly I read it from, but it was this article talking about how we as the planet that we're living on, Mother Earth, is simply getting too hot, and we're fast reaching the point where that 1.5 degree increase is like the window to reverse that is getting smaller and smaller, and that window of opportunity is quite soon, like within the next 3 to 8 years or something like that. And when I read that and I started thinking about it, I got so anxious, and like it gave me feelings like similar to a fever dream, like midlife crisis. And I really had to, first of all, remind myself it's okay that I'm feeling like this, because it shows that I care. And it's been a really good opportunity for me to kind of rethink and recommit to the sustainable kaupapa, and something that has always been really, really important to me. But over the years, I haven't been able to give a high commitment just because of how life has been. But it's been a really good opportunity for me to think about my lifestyle, and how is it that I live my life in a more sustainable way. And I would have otherwise not had that opportunity if I just kind of let myself sit with those emotions and not kind of think about, well, how can I follow through with some action. And that has been really has helped with those really big emotions, by kind of following through with action and thinking about how to recommit myself. So I hope that helps. But I wanted to get into the meat of this episode and talking about keeping up with the theme of emotions, but talking about what therapy has taught me so far and how it relates to, you know, the bigger, wider conversations that we have about diversity and inclusion and all of this other good stuff. And the first thing that I would like to say is, I'm not saying that everyone, even though I think everyone should go to therapy or counseling, but even if you don't go to counseling or therapy, when you look at when you do work like that, it makes you a lot more vulnerable, and it makes you reshift your mindset. And there have been some core beliefs about myself that I have changed, that I have changed about how I think about myself, how I talk about myself. And if I can change those core beliefs about myself, I can change my thoughts on anything, or I have the ability or the capacity to change my thoughts about anything else in this world. And it's not scary. It doesn't spell the end. It doesn't spell out a loss. You know, I think there's all these things that we think about when it comes to change, and lots of fear and anxiety. And I think we all kind of paint stories about what it means if we were to you know, like, fundamentally change like that. And if I can, yeah, change my mind about myself, I can change my mind about the world and everyone and everything else in this world. And it's quite empowering to know that, because I think the process of change or that level of growth is really, really humbling. The way that you're like cracked open like a nut, like you are just open to be more vulnerable. And when you are, you know, kind of under the spotlight like that, your like attachment to your ego, attachment to your defensiveness, your attachment to your beliefs, you kind of have to let go of them in that moment. And because yeah, here's the thing about defensiveness that I've really personally learned for myself, is that it is deep down, it's just a way of protecting yourself, or a way that you think you're protecting yourself, but that kind of protection where it's not great for you in the long run, it just kind of keeps you in the same place and kind of keeps you in the dark when you really need to be out there seeing everything and examining everything. But when you kind of are really attached to the ego, or really attached to your armor, it's hard to see everything in the light, and you really have to let go of that. And I think when you translate that to allyship, or thinking about the world, I think people are really like, I feel like that defensiveness or that protective mechanism kind of can come up in many ways, but the common ways I feel like it comes up is A, the protection of privilege. And I think a lot of people, especially people who haven't had the chance to really assess how privilege shows up in their lives, if you haven't had a chance to assess how privilege shows up in your life, there's this attachment to it, and it then becomes like so intertwined with who you are as a person, because you haven't had an opportunity to look at it and then separate, you know, privilege from self. And you know, then there's this fear that, you know, things are going to be taken away from you as an individual, which is, it sounds insane saying it out loud like that, but it is so true. If I think back to, you know, just like really critical points in my life where I have had growth in particular spaces, it's been because I had to be brave enough to separate things from myself, or separate things out so I can learn to build it back up together. And it's really scary doing that. And I think that is a skill that's required when you are kind of entering the space and when you are talking about diversity and inclusion, is really talking about pulling yourself apart to then build yourself back up together. And if you can do that for yourself, you can do that for anything else, everything else, everyone else in this world. But yeah, the process of growth, it really does humble you like that, and you realize that the things that are protecting you don't allow you to see things as they fully are if you allow yourself to keep being protected. And you see how that manifests when we're talking about allyship, whether it like manifests in maybe framed in a more positive way where it's like, hey, I would love to, but I don't want to make mistakes. I would love to, but like I hear that a lot, or that comes up a lot in this kind of space. Or even if it manifests in a really more direct way where it's like, you know, I've had trials in my life and overcome them, you know, everyone can. Or why do we do so much for, you know, X group? Like, there are so many ways that protests or objections to diversity, race and inclusion kind of come up. But I think it's not until you kind of learn to detach so you can build back up again and you can be brave enough to be vulnerable to let go, then you can see how things fully are. And I think another thing that therapy has taught me a lot and has trickled into my allyship is being really curious and asking lots of questions. I think there were so many things about therapy that made me realize there was so much that I just didn't really know about myself or who I am as a person. And and I had to be okay with being curious about myself and being curious about the world. And it sounds so ridiculous, you know, like especially being at my ripe old age and being able to say I actually don't really know who I am, but you know, that's my reality. And it wasn't until I really allowed myself to just be curious and keep asking questions was I able to kind of maybe have more answers than I would have if I kind of came in with some predetermined ideas. And it's so important to always be curious and to ask questions, because you can never really assume what the answer is, even if you have a strong idea what it may be. You can never assume. And so always ask, but always ask in a way where it's done with empathy and compassion and kindness. You know, it's so easy for us to assume that, it's easy for those questions to come across in a way where it may have the potential to create more harm. But I think if you always ask those questions with compassion and empathy and curiosity, it will always lead you to good places. And another thing that therapy has been really helpful with is creating safe places for the not so cool emotions or thoughts. I think I still I still very much do it now. I'm not perfect, and it's always a big journey. But I think one thing that I used to really do a lot is police myself. And if there were thoughts that weren't so like positive, or I had this sense of like that's something a really bad person would say, I would just shut down on that, like crack down on that thought so hard, and crack down in a way where it was like, holy heck, it's like, Amal, do you even love yourself? Do you respect yourself? Because I would just like crack down in such a harsh manner. And yeah, it's still not perfect, and I've got a long way to go. But I would just like crack down on myself so hard, and it was just like, yeah, so crazy. And I think what I really learned is, if I really want to dedicate myself to this healing process, if I really want to dedicate myself to growing as a human, then I need to be okay with I need to be okay with those thoughts coming up, and I shouldn't really shame myself for it, because it is part of the process. And I'm really learning to see those types of feelings as just visitors in the house that is my spirit and my soul, and just kind of letting them walk through the front door, and then, you know, they'll be able to show themselves out. But I shouldn't make a big deal about it in a way where I'm making them a cup of tea and making sure that they're comfortable and they have a seat at the table, or hosting them fully when they can. Sure, they came in, and they can make find their own way out, and just being committed to that, if I'm really committed to healing. And I think the way that has translated to my allyship is if there are, you know, there are people in my life that maybe they don't say things which are very inclusive, or say things where it's quite clear that they're running off stereotypes, and if I'm really committed to that person and helping them or supporting them in their allyship, then I need to create those safe places for those types of thoughts. You know, when people say them, it's usually I think in our society now, we are so quick to shut people down, and I can't do that. Because it only leads to shame, or people shutting down or shutting themselves out. And I think that's what used to happen to me with my own thoughts. And I think you can very much translate that to allyship, and translate that into a skill as well. And if, you know, there are people in my life that I really want to commit to, you know, I need to create like a safe place, and need to create a place where you kind of bring that same energy. You know, you let those thoughts come and go, and not to make it mean something about that person, but how do you move on in a way where you can actually have a productive conversation about it? And I used to be really bad at that. Like if a loved one would say something that was not all good, oh man, I would just go in, and not mean to, but definitely shame them and say maybe not so cool things. And I felt very justified in doing that because, you know, they said something bad and something not cool, and so this is how I should respond. And I think I've really softened in that aspect. And yet it wasn't until I started going to counseling and sushi going quite consistently that I was like, oh, okay, if I'm going to bring this energy to myself, then I should really bring that to my loved ones. And when I say this, I say this with a, with, you know, with the exception of, you know, it's people that you really want to invest in. So like, you know, family, really good friends. If it's like just the person off the street who has shouted out something horrible, you know, it's a different energy. But I'm talking about people that you really want to be there for them in the long run. And it's like just creating those safe places for, you know, questions, for clumsy worded things, for, you know, the ugliness that we tend to shut down really, really quickly. The ugliness that we tend to shut down really, really quickly. I think it's important that we just create a safe place, and create a safe place in a way where, you know, you don't make a big deal out of it and don't make it to mean something about you or that person, but just accepting it as part of the process and kind of moving through, pushing through to get to the conversation on the other side of that. And yeah, those are the top things that therapy has taught me so far. And it's been a really humbling experience and like a long way to go. There's still very much a long way to go. But it's been so interesting kind of drawing connections between what we talk about in counseling sessions and how that extends to, or the drip effect or the domino that it, effect that it has in other areas of your life. It's really quite interesting, and this is why I think it's so important that people do the emotional work just as much as you do like the knowledge-based type of work. You know, like it's good to know what all of these phrases and terms and concepts mean, like intersectionality, for example, like confirmation bias, for example. But it's also so important to like do the emotional work as well, because you know how you are in your emotional sphere, it's like another lens that you look at this world with, and it is a lens that helps you interact with the world around you. And I think, yeah, since I've started going to counseling, the way that I interact with myself has definitely helped with how I like show up in these different spaces as well. And I've noticed that the way I attach to things, the way that I detach, the way that I'm more curious and open-minded and soft has all been because of the fact that I've gone to counseling. And you know, because you're essentially kind of unpacking who you are as a person constantly and quite actively and purposefully in therapy. And it's been so awesome like seeing that drip into my allyship, because because those same things that I ask about who I am, I'm able to do that for myself now. And I think it kind of comes down to that concept of like how you love yourself, how you accept yourself, how you analyze yourself, is how you see other people as well, which sounds, again, really weird and strange and maybe quite simple saying that out loud, but it is, it's so true. It is so true. How you hold space for yourself is very much a reflection of how you can do that for other people. And it sounds easier said than done, and it is really, really hard work, but it is so important. And when you do that, like, level of work to yourself, everything that was kind of in the dark before gets brought to the light. And when you really commit to your allyship, you know, everything that was in the dark before, whether it was hidden by your bias, whether it was hidden by ignorance, whether it was hidden by, you know, defensive mechanisms, whether it was hidden by fear, like, there are so many different things, but all of that gets brought to the light and you see everything in a bigger picture, in a clearer picture. And when I think about, like, the empathy that we have for ourselves and the empathy that we can have for people, because I think a lot of people are kind of in the spectrum of, like, I care about life and humanity, but the life and humanity that you care about very much hinges on the fact of, well, what does life and humanity look like to you? And often what ends up happening, whether it's on purpose or not, but you only can care about life and humanity to the extent that you see life and humanity. And you know, if that's looking a particular way, you know, what kind of life and humanity are you missing out in the way that you see it? And again, everything won't be able to be brought to the light, or you won't be able to see everything unless you are able to hold that space for yourself. But it involves a lot of work, and so yeah, therapy has taught me a lot. My counselor is amazing and life-changing, and yeah, it has honestly taught me so much. So this mahi is very much about self, just as much as it is about other things in life. The last thing that I wanted to talk about, and the final note that I wanted to wrap this episode on today, was just kind of talking about the relation between objectivity, success, and, like, how that relates to representation and how it relates to you know, filling quotas and all that kind of stuff. And the reason why I've even kind of stumbled across this thought and wanted to talk about it on the show is a very cool person I know spoke about it on their, like, personal page the other day, and how they were at an event and it was like a Q&A type of session, and someone asked a question and it kind of was a cascade for, you know, all these thoughts and things that I'm about to talk to, and you know, what does it mean when you look at the world through the lens of objectivity compared to the lens of race, and how does that relate to how you talk about success and representation. I kind of want to talk about starting this conversation by talking about success as a minority. And you know, I know that there are some that people are moving away from using the word minority, like, for very valid reasons, but just for a lack of a better word in this situation, I will stick to using the word minority. But, you know, when or maybe, you know, success when you're not someone who is of the majority. And it is really, really strange navigating success as a minority. And I feel like as a minority in general, you know, there are more barriers in the way to access and to resources and to understanding and to, yep, all of these other things. There are a lot more barriers, and there are those barriers exist for when it comes to success as well, and how you, you know, as, and I'm not speaking for everyone who comes from a minority experience now, I think I'm just speaking to my specific experience, but you know, there will be you know, I'm sure there will be other people who also feel the same way. But, you know, when you achieve success as someone who comes from a minority background, you know, however that manifesto looks like, people are quite quick to turn that into something else, or for it to mean something else than it would if someone from the majority was to reach that same level of success. Even reaching that success is huge, and I'll get into this later, but this is not to undermine, you know, when regardless of who you are, when you do something awesome or achieve that success, that is awesome, and you like have worked really, really hard to achieve that and to reach that stage in your life. That I'm not saying that at all, but to achieve that level of success is quite hard. It's not easy, and it's people are quite quick to reduce that. You know, you've only gotten this because you're XYZ. It's a lot easier for XYZ nowadays, or it's that to achieve that level of success, you had to work really hard to even be heard in the first place, or you had to work really hard to be fully seen. Like, you know, my parents always told me growing up, like, this was drilled into my head, and I can understand why they had to drill it into my head, because, you know, unfortunately they were right. But they really drilled it into my head that you, like, as a Black Muslim woman living in Aotearoa, you have to work 10 times as hard to reach the same level. You have to, yeah, work 10 times as hard to be taken seriously, to be listened to. Like, this expectation that you have to work 10 times as hard was like drilled into our head. And you know, it's yeah, the standard to reach that level of success, I feel like, is a lot higher. A lot higher to get to where you need to go. And I think that is the reason why my parents just drilled it into my head so much. But you know, so A, there's that expectation, like, you just have to work a lot harder. B, you know, people aren't as forgiving or allow that room to make mistakes or make room to, like, not be 10 out of 10 perfect. And so I think, you know, that's why it's a lot harder, you know, to see, especially when it's like really high level success. It's like, the higher you go, it's harder to see the diversity there, because the expectation is way higher. And so it's even strange and harder to reach that level of success. But when you do reach that level of success, it definitely is like watered down or belittled, or just like taken in a way that doesn't honor the success for what it truly is. And I think why I'm kind of bringing up this idea of success is that, again, what I was saying before, when you, especially at that high level, when someone achieves something that amazing, it is amazing, and, you know, we shouldn't take that away from someone. But I think where it gets tricky is, you know, when we are looking at the high level things of success. And I just want to put a side note out there that, you know, even though we're kind of pushed this idea of what success is. It's up to you. You define success for yourself and what it means and what it looks like and what it feels like. So I definitely want to say that as a wee disclaimer. But, you know, if we're looking at that high level of success, like who's winning the big awards, you know, at the Oscars, what kind of films are being nominated? When we look at books, what books are being nominated for the big awards, who's being put forward for, you know, more, maybe perhaps more objective lens of looking at success, but not that it demeans that level of success. It's still a really big deal. But when we look at that level of success, and then we ask the questions of, well, how come we don't see XYZ voices or XYZ communities are missing, or, you know, in a more blunt, frank manner, like, this is looking hella wide, like, why is that? And then this argument of merit is always put up, and it's this argument of merit is put with the lens of being objective. You know, when people kind of use object and push back against representation, you know, this idea of, you know, being objective, I think, is what is put forward, and that comes across as like so reasonable. But when we allow for that to happen, it's quite damaging, because it reinforces the current systems. And when you think, oh yes, that's objective to look at things just on merit, it makes the implication that asking for representation is too much, or even asking the question, why does the nomination list or why does the winners list look so wide? It makes it seem like that's an outrageous thing to ask, because you're asking your, you know, as if almost you're crying wolf and looking at the world through the lens of race, when, and I've heard this argument time and time again, you know, we're not looking at it through the lens of race. This is just simply about merit and who is good for the world. It's like so objective looking at the world like that, and I think that's quite harmful, actually, because you're putting two things together that are not being, that shouldn't be put together. I think when people kind of argue this objective view, they're putting the idea that representation is important and being critical of why isn't it representative, along with the idea that, well, merit doesn't matter. You know, achieving the standard doesn't matter, when that's not true, and that is not what is being said. And yeah, I think when we talk about representation, we don't talk about this like specific niche of it, which is representation when it comes to success. And I think that objective lens is a really harmful way of looking, of looking at success. Because with anything, everything else in life, like our systems and our identity and our race and are all intertwined with every aspect of life, and that very much includes success. And so, you know, when those critical questions are asked, and valid questions are asked about, well, you know, why does the winners list look very white, that's a very valid question to ask, because that's not asking the question, or that's not asking the question in a way where people are like, you know, the quality doesn't matter here, people don't need to meet standards, they just need to not be white, and then automatically can have these pathways opened up. And it sounds really gross even saying that out loud, but, you know, it's definitely stuff that I've heard in my life, whether it was said to me, or, you know, about another marginalized or minority community, you know, people feel like their whiteness is being attacked. And, you know, these, the more that we talk about race and diversity and inclusion, you know, the more these valid questions are being asked, and then it's been seen as an attack on whiteness, or attack on that objective lens of success, which is not true, and it's not accurate, and it's really, really harmful. And so, you know, when we think about representation, and when we talk about representation, it's not just about the stories that we hear. It's not just about the stories that we want to see. I think it's also valid questions to be asking about when we are talking about that higher level, and those voices are not seen or are missing. And, you know, it also, like, carries very scary implications that, you know, that level of success is only for a certain group of humans, or, you know, if you can just see how, like, that feeds into imposter syndrome. And that's not all good. I think that burden of asking that question shouldn't be put on, you know, well, what does that mean about the standards? The standards are going to slip. The burden should be put on all of us to kind of think about, well, yeah, why is it that this list isn't very diverse at all? Because don't get me wrong, there are so many intelligent, talented, and much needed voices from minority communities that aren't being upheld or uplifted by, you know, this on this larger scale of success, and are often not counted in the room. And I think it speaks very much to, like, who holds the power, and, you know, that those who do hold the power, who they are looking at, and what voices they prioritize. And so when we talk about representation, and especially with in regards to success, it's so important that we ask those questions, because people aren't crying wolf, and it matters. Because if we don't question that, if we don't ask those questions, it's actually reinforcing the current systems that we have, and this objection, or this idea of being objective, is really harmful, and it's not an excuse that we can use anymore. And on that lovely note, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Headscarves and Good Yarns. I always really appreciate the aroha, and catch you for the next one. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Headscarves and Good Yarns. To keep spinning the yarns, let us know your thoughts. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Headscarves and Good Yarns, or email us at headscarvesandgoodyarn@gmail.com.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.